Online in Business Talk. Voice America Business.
This is The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on the following show are solely those of the host, guest, and its callers. It's time for The Growth Strategist. Here's your host, Aldana Ambler.
Well, welcome to The Growth Strategist. This is Aldana Ambler, and today we're talking about growing your business through angel money. Wouldn't that be fun to be able to have an angel take care of you? Okay, now we'll have to talk about what I mean a little bit later in the show. I want to go and refer back to some of the previous programs because we've had almost a series on some similar topics, and I want to make sure everybody knows where and when they were. A lot of what growing your business is about is making sure that you're working your money well. And sometimes it's other people's money that you need to work well. And the problems I've seen some of my clients get into over the years, I've worked with over 800 clients, and they've all been rapidly growing companies, people that are really looking to hit it, you know, have a minimum of 50%, and most of them are trying for 100% growth. The problems I've seen is that they've been trying to go for the wrong kind of money. They talk about venture capital when they should be looking at an ESOP. They look at a line of credit and try to leverage the banks like crazy when they really should be going for an IPO. You know, I mean, people get it all mixed up. So we've done a series of shows here, and it's been on an average about one a month. And I want to refer back to a couple of them so that you can go into the archives, check them out, you know, put them on the iPod, whatever you need to do. To have a series of these, and we're going to be creating a series of them as a product pretty soon. On January 25th, we did a program with Steve DePalma, who is a partner with Shore DePalma Engineering. And he talked about, you know, the equity deals and how they grew their engineering firm, which is an award-winning, really fabulous engineering firm in New Jersey and Pennsylvania, Connecticut, New York, et cetera, the Mid-Atlantic region. And he talked in great detail about how the ESOP worked in their company. And that's an employee buyout, where you have more than one owner and you have the employees getting a piece of the action. And it's very exciting. So that's worth listening to. On March 22nd, we talked to John Martinson, who is the founder of the Edison Fund. This is a guy who's really high up in the Association of Venture Capitalists nationally. And he talked about, you know, what does it take to go after venture capital money. Again, that was on March 22nd. Probably going to miss one of these. Let's see, April 9th. No, that's not the right date. May 3rd, we talked to Julie Gorella of McCall Gorella, and you've probably heard of Hugh McCall of telecommunications fame. He leveraged his money and created a from telecommunications and got into private investment. And that's what we talked about with Julie is, you know, what do you need to do to attract private investors to want to invest in your business? And that's not the same as what the venture capital firms are doing. So listen to those two shows and get the distinctions between what they're talking about. On June 7th, we talked to Karen Francini of the New Jersey Economic Development Authority about government-backed money. Some of us need to get SBA loans, and some of us need to look for research development grants and things like that. So it's important to know your local economic development authority and check that out before you start assuming you're going to have to go to venture capital. And July, let's see, we did something in July. We did, I think that's the one where, it was August 2nd. Excuse me. I talked about how you go after corporate sponsorship because that's something that an awful lot of private companies have not considered. But you can reach into some of the pockets of the large corporations if you do a big enough project, and they see it as community-based. So if you haven't thought about how corporate sponsorship works, you might want to look at the August 2nd show. Today we're talking with Chris Starr of Innovation Philadelphia on angel money, and then we have a show coming up on September 6th with Chris Warren, who's an executive vice president with Sun National Bank. We're going to be talking about bank, you know, going after bank loans and lines. How much can you expect and what should you really be asking on September 6th? And we have a guest coming up. I'm not sure the exact date, but it's coming up pretty soon. You know, how do you really evaluate your company as to whether or not you're ready for an initial public offering? There's two other shows that, you know, refer to money. They don't sound like it, but they are about money. And that's the January 18th show about franchising. Because basically what you're doing there is having other people pay you to do it your way. What a concept, huh? And we had Ben Levin of Spar Levin Law Firm talking about that on January 18th. And in May 31st show on strategic alliances with Larry Kesslen of For Profit is also about money because you're talking about how do you have a big corporation like IBM back you as a distributor and back your education and back, you know, bringing you in with other people, bring you deals, you know, leverage their marketing. You know, so think about it. A lot of growth strategies are about how to work money. Now, like I said, today's show is about angel money. And, you know, we're not all talking about Oprah Winfrey, although she is a good example. I mean, some of what's going on in the world of finance is that there's people who have succeeded in what they're doing, and they hit the point where I've just thought about a speaker that I know. His name is Nito Quibane. If you've never heard him, he's excellent. And he's a business owner. He started with a public relations firm and kind of spread out to other things. He now is the chairman of the board of the Great Harvest Bread Company is the name of it. Nito, I apologize if I'm saying the name of the company wrong. And other ventures, and he's been on bank boards, and now he's the president of the High Point University. He talks about the fact that CEOs that he's worked with and people like him reach a point where they have to make the decision in their life about is success enough? And they're really looking to become what he calls significant. And he has a book about, you know, and speeches about from going from success to significance. And one of the ways that people who have money deal with that question of, you know, what am I going to be, what's the significance of my life? What's the purpose of it? How do I use my money? You know, once you got the big house and once you got the boat and once you've got the toys, for a lot of people, it's not enough. And Oprah is not the only person out there who has reached, you know, a point in her life where it isn't just about her. She's got the big house and she's got the TV show, yada, yada. Well, look what she does with it. And one of the people that works with us, he's a guy who was a manager at Campbell's Soup Company for just forever. And he doesn't like his kids. Or they don't like him. I don't know which one it is. And he wants his money. He doesn't want to, you know, be buried with his money. He doesn't want his money to go to his kids. And he's asked us to look for investments that are meaningful to him. And he has a little portfolio. It's not a lot compared to Oprah, but this guy is an angel financer over things that relate to music. He says, you know, my kids, I've spent a ton of money to put them through music school and clarinet lessons. And, you know, they had all the best, and they haven't done anything with it. And I didn't do anything with music when I was growing up. And if I could find something that really leverages music in a different way. So, you know, when we're looking at some of the technology companies, if they do something unique with music, we put it in front of them. You know, he could have been an investor in Napster if he liked the concept. You know, maybe he wouldn't like the idea of the proprietary questions. But, you know, it was about how do we get more music in people's hands, and et cetera. You know, who knows? He might have invested in that. Something with the iPods or something with a new gadget is put in front of a person like that. So you never know. The point of it is, an awful lot of folks, an awful lot of people who own their own businesses forget the personality behind the money. The reason that somebody wanted to invest isn't just for the return. In fact, a lot of the venture capitalists that I've worked with, if you ask them about their fund, they may have 10 to 12 companies that they're currently investing in. And they will quickly say, if you listen, if we have one or two that really hit, we're thrilled. Now think about that. That means that there's 7 or 8. Or 9 that didn't, quote, really hit. Now, they're not trying to lose money. Nobody's trying to lose money. But why would there be an interest in a company where it wasn't this clear that it was going to be a big, big hit right away? Why would the venture capitalists, you know, they get the reputation of being vulture capitalists, why would they hang on to something? Well, sometimes it's about it adds to significance. If they are really trying to add to a technology, develop a field, do something that they couldn't have done as an employee, live vicariously through the entrepreneur, do something that they personally couldn't have done, there is an emotional piece to investment. There is. I'm not saying you should take advantage of that in a negative way. I think it's just important to have listened to why somebody is working their money the way it is. So if you're thinking about approaching private investors, angels, venture capitalists, philanthropists, I think it's important to get to know the people. What are they interested in? I mean, if a company says back, we're only looking at the entertainment industry. Okay, if your business has nothing to do with entertainment, don't bug them. There was a reason they came up with that portfolio, was from their experience, from their interest, from trying to be significant, from knowing that industry so that they can evaluate a deal. And I've seen people, you know, just assume, well, you've got money, so you should be able to do this. No. If they tell you it was music, if they tell you it was entertainment, if they tell you it was retail, if they tell you it was manufacturing, if they tell you it was biotech, and you're not any of those, back off. But there really is, through relationship development, you can find out what makes somebody tick. What are they looking for? Sometimes it's in directories. Sometimes it's like go to the venture capital fairs. Go to the every state seems to have the innovation-related organizations. They have the tech councils. Our guest today is going to be talking about some of these groups that he's in. He's on a number of boards. I think it takes networking with people with money to learn how they tick, to hear what's behind the decisions for you to make a good decision about who you approach. And we're going to talk about how do you find the angels that are out there and what's the difference between, you know, angel money and venture capital money. I mean, is the return on investment that they're looking for different? The biggest thing I see that's different is that the angel financiers are almost always, now I've seen some exceptions, but almost always looking for early stage money. They're looking for startups. They're looking for the companies that are between about $1 million and $2 million. Sometimes it's as high as $5 million. But angel money tends to go to not an absolute cold startup that doesn't have a dime. They want to know that you're actually an enterprise. So the $1 million threshold is pretty smart when you think about it. If you haven't even figured out how to generate customers and get some revenue coming in, you're not quite ready to be talking about outside financing. But if you've gotten to the $1 million point, but you need some traction, and you're introducing a new technology, you're introducing a new product to the marketplace that didn't exist before, you're taking a chance, and maybe you're a scientist, or maybe, you know, you're really into the product, and money isn't your thing, it is worth you looking for angel money first before you even go to some of the venture capitalists. And when we get back from the break, I want you to listen to the questions that I asked Chris Starr, who is working in a couple of capacities. He's the Managing Director and Vice President of Investments for Innovation Philadelphia and the Executive Director for Mid-Atlantic Angel Group Fund. This is the kind of guy that I want you to get to know in your state and in your country because they're connected, not to bug him to death, but this is who you're trying to find. After the break, I'll introduce you to Chris Starr. This is The Growth Strategist with Aldon Ambler.
Business talk is all we do. Voice America Business at voiceamerica.com.
If you're a struggling business trying to get to the next plateau and would like to learn more about what Aldona can do for you, log on to thegrowthstrategist.com. Listen to some of our many satisfied clients.
We called in the Growth Strategist to do a strategic analysis of our company, design an organizational structure, and improve our management team. The important point is that Aldona Ambler gets it. Her extensive experience coaching fast growth companies has really paid off for us.
Aldona played a key role in driving the rapid growth of our company. We now have a strategic growth plan in place, obtained growth financing, have a stronger management team, and expanded our services, and are already seeing profits. Companies dealing with business growth issues couldn't ask for a better or wiser business advisor than Aldona Ambler.
What are you waiting for? Call 1-888-ALDONA today and see where your business can go tomorrow. Once again, that number is 1-888-ALDONNA. TheGrowthStrategist.com. Achieving accelerated growth with sustained profitability.
Technology is only as good as its execution. On CIO Talk Radio, host Sung Jo Gal will interview CIOs, CTOs, and other decision makers about their insights in dealing with technology. Learn directly from these subject matter experts on how to get the best returns out of your investment in IT. Know ahead of time what problems and challenges you face in executing IT strategies in the real world. If you are a technology manager, consultant, or advisor, you cannot afford to miss out on what today's technology thought leaders have to say about today's most urgent IT issues. Listen to CIO Talk Radio with Sung Jo Gal every Friday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
Achieve total wealth management. Listen to Three-Dimensional Wealth with Roy Diefendorf every Monday at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 Eastern on Business America Radio. Three-Dimensional Wealth is a show dedicated to teaching you a values-based approach to comprehensive total wealth management through practical strategies and expert advice. Take your first step down the road of financial independence. Listen to Three-Dimensional Wealth with Roy Diefendorf Mondays at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 Eastern, here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, businessamericaradio.com.
keeping you a step ahead of the changing world of business. This is Voice America Business.
You're listening to The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. If you would like to call into the show, dial toll-free at 1-866-233-7861. Now let's jump into another segment of The Growth Strategist. Here's your host, Aldana Ambler.
Well, welcome back to The Growth Strategist. This is Aldana Ambler. And, you know, if a name can tell you where you're headed, this guy took his name to heart. Hey, Chris. We have Chris Starr on the phone.
Hi, Aldana.
How are you?
Very
looking
good.
Over, you know, I've heard of you and I've met you a few times, but, you know, I hadn't seen your resume. You've been busy.
I sure have.
You've been busy. You did like I did, though. You put yourself through school, you know, like went to school full-time while you were working full-time, didn't you?
I did.
You had to. Otherwise, the math doesn't work. You couldn't possibly have done all these jobs and still be under 40.
Well, that and raising a family, too, makes it, it limits
really?
Your options. So if
how
you
many
want
kids? You have kids?
I have three.
Do you really?
I do.
Well, you have been busy. How old are your kids?
Let's see. My youngest is 4, my middle is 7, and my oldest is 9.
That is so cool. Good for you. And you just got back from a vacation in Las Vegas, and I can't help but ask, did you gamble?
You know, I didn't. My wife gambled a little bit at the slot machines, but you know, I gamble on a daily basis in my work, and I like my odds better than I do the casino odds.
I'll tell you what, you're a lot like the rest of my clients because I find that the really rapidly growing companies, the ones that are, they're totally risk, you know, they're open to risk and they're taking chances, hiring people and doing money and leveraging this and buying that. They don't gamble unless they've hit a point where the rest of their company is kind of holding them back and they're getting bored.
Yeah, I've noticed something similar. I mean, I've noticed that entrepreneurs, they bet when they know the odds or when they think
mm-hmm.
they can beat the odds,
mm-hmm.
which tends to be in the areas that they run their business. They know mm-hmm. the risk factors. You know, other types of risks are out of their control. So they tend not to be gamblers outside of their company.
No, and I'll ask somebody to have an emergency board meeting if the top guys start to go to the tables. Anyway, let's talk about a little bit of your background. I would like the people that are listening to hear a little about your background. I mean, you do have your bachelor's degrees, your MBA, and your JD from Temple, and you've worked with Stevens and Lee Law Firm. What were you doing there?
I was there doing corporate legal work. Yeah,
you handled some business transactions, that kind of stuff?
Business transactions. I did mergers and acquisitions. I was involved in, IPOs, those kind of things.
Oh, well. Well, you might want to be on the show when we're talking about IPOs. There's not as many of those nowadays as there were
aren't.
In, like, the late 90s. Have you noticed that?
Oh, absolutely. No question about it. A lot more mergers and acquisitions, for sure.
Yeah. And then you went to Dean Witter. What'd you do there?
I was at Dean Witter. Actually, they converted over to Morgan Stanley while I was there. I was a retail stockbroker. It was one of my first jobs coming out of college, and I was trying to get some experience working with a large Wall Street firm, and they sent me up to New York and trained me at the World Trade Center, and it was a fantastic
wow.
business experience.
Now, when you were doing that, did you know where you were headed? I mean, I know that sounds silly, but did you know where your career was going and you'd be running an angel fund, or did you not know that yet?
You know, when I was growing up, my mom and dad had gotten divorced when I was younger. My dad went out to the West Coast, and I live with my mother here in the East Coast. And he worked at a number of medical device companies and ultimately was president and CEO of about 5 or 6 different medical device startups.
Oh, what a cool background.
Yeah, he was having a lot of fun. Most of his companies were venture-backed, so he had gotten the experience of running these companies and going out and getting them funded. And
oh, so you've been exposed to this for a long time then.
I have been, yeah. And
yeah.
He would tell me, you know, these stories about, you know, racing from Los Angeles up to San Francisco to meet with the VCs and, you know, driving through the night to get there on time because the flight was canceled and, you know, getting there 2 minutes ahead of time and then having to make the pitch for the life or death
wow.
of his company. And he always said, you know, if you ever have the opportunity, the venture capital business is really
yeah.
the one of the most fun things you can do. And it's always been something I aspired to. And while it was coming up through getting, you know, basic business experience, I was building, you know, my educational background with the MBA and the law degree to give myself the tools that I would need to get into that field.
So you knew you wanted to become a VC. Your dad planted it, and you kind of you kind of thought, well, maybe.
Yep.
Interesting. All right, now, one of the reasons I'm doing this is I'd like our listeners to think. When you're networking with people and you're listening to the up-and-comers, and you're talking to somebody who was working on Wall Street and they had a law firm job, and, you know, watch their networking. You don't know who the next director or executive director of an angel fund is going to be. And it might be your buddy who, you know, is getting a little bit of experience on Wall Street this year. That 5 years from now, you're going to be going back and saying, okay, now, you know how you do when I talked about where I was headed. The networking you do when you're in school, when you're young, when you're developing your company matters. So you might have spotted someone like Chris Darwin if you were, you know, kind of aware of it. All right, so after Dean Witter, how long were you there?
I was there a little over a year, and I then went to work with Merck Pharmaceutical. And
now, why a pharmaceutical company?
Merck was one of the biggest employers in the Philadelphia region,
and
they were very close to where I lived.
Mm-hmm.
So this was one of those, you know, sort of compromise positions. I didn't make a ton of money, but they were close by. It enabled me to go to school at night. They paid for my MBA for me, which was
good for
nice. I got great experience both in marketing, and I spent most of my time in corporate finance, and it was just a good another, you know, sort of not too long after school to you know, type of position to help gain additional business experience at a large company.
Yeah, and it probably paid off for them. I mean, sometimes the people hear that a corporation paid for an MBA, and you wonder, should they have done that? What did they get for doing that for you?
Well, yeah, I was with the company for 3 years.
Yeah.
I was responsible for handling accounts with 8 of our 10 biggest companies.
Mm-hmm.
So basically everything that Merck did was on credit.
Yeah.
And my role was basically to determine what credit limits would be given to these various companies. So, you know, it might be Rite Aid or Walmart, you know, the various large retail pharmaceutical chains and things
like
that.
Well, you were evaluating risk even at that point.
Absolutely. And what I was doing was figuring out on both a fundamental and on a quantitative basis, you know, how likely are these customers going to be able to repay us on our credit terms.
Boy, you've leveraged those 3 years, haven't you?
Absolutely. And these were hundreds of millions of dollars typically. So it was a lot of responsibility at a young age as well.
Now, why did you leave Merck and go to Innovation Factory?
Basically, that was my opportunity to get into the world of venture capital.
Oh, that was a big jump, huh?
It was about 6 years ago, and it was around the time when the internet boom had really taken off.
Mm-hmm.
There were more venture firms than ever.
That's true.
There was more money being plowed into venture firms than ever, and it represented my. You know, probably best opportunity timing-wise to be able to make a shift.
Now, what did they do? I mean, I know that they've been focused on the greater Philadelphia region, kind of to bring in the rapidly growing companies. Am I remembering that right?
Well, actually, the Innovation Factory was a short-lived venture. It was an entrepreneurial venture founded by a local entrepreneur by the name of Marvin Weinberger.
Okay.
So it wasn't where I'm at now, even though it's a similar name.
Okay.
6 years later, now I'm at Innovation Philadelphia. But that was a company called Innovation Factory.
Mm-hmm.
And it was also a risky move for me. It was one of those things where it was a startup entrepreneurial team. They had formed an incubator trying to grow some of the internet companies at the time. They had a little bit of funding with which to make seed investments in these companies.
Mm-hmm.
And I had actually gone around town trying to find a venture capital job and had a difficult time.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time I met Marvin Weinberger, the head of that company, I had basically offered my services for free.
Mm-hmm.
I basically said, look, I'll work for you unpaid if need be, but I really want to break into this field.
Well, you were determined. You're like the clients, you know, that entrepreneurial one that, you know, they give all the sweat equity to get to the point where they are.
And that was the environment at the time.
Right.
It was one of those situations where, you know, if you wanted to work at a startup, there were lots of opportunities. You weren't going to make much money, but there was always equity floating around.
Yep.
And if you were willing to take a risk and put in the work,
there was
possible upside. And
so how'd you end up at Eastern Technology Fund and LendFest?
Well, what happened at Innovation Factory was it was clear, you know, fairly early on that it wasn't going to be a successful venture, unfortunately.
Was that scary?
It was kind of scary. I mean, especially, you know, at the time I had two children. and was
and had left Merck.
I had left Merck, the nice safe corporate job, and you know, it, after about a week working at Innovation Factory, they fortunately started to pay me. I think they were impressed with the work. That
only a week.
It was only a week.
My God, you didn't take the same kind of risk some other people did back in the like 1999 kind of time frame.
Well, it, you know, when I went in, I didn't know what was going to happen.
Yeah, yeah.
But I made a point at that time to get as well networked as I possibly could.
Yeah.
And I spent virtually every breakfast, every lunch, every dinner, every evening out at networking events, whether it would be the local technology council or the local venture capital group or whatever industry events were going on in the technology industry, I would go out.
And I hope everybody hears what you just said, because that's, I think it takes to really find the right kind of money, too.
Absolutely. And and those early networking days were critical and led to me meeting with Wayne Kimmel, who was the head of the Eastern Technology Fund, which was a newly formed venture capital fund. They had raised about $20 million from some of the angels that you're talking about today.
Yeah.
We had about 85 different angel investors that had put money into the
fund. Wow, that many?
Yep.
That's a larger group than a lot of the funds around the country.
It was a very early stage fund.
Yeah.
And it was very small at $20 million, and it was really sort of a who's who in the greater Philadelphia and tri-state region.
And some of our listeners, you know, are going to be the type that they've grown their business to $20 million or $100 million, and they're actually thinking of becoming an angel. So, you know, when a young guy who is, you know, in a place like the Innovation Factory or comes to some place like the Eastern Technology Fund and they start talking to you about participation, it may be a way for you to be, like, listen to the numbers. 85 people, $20 million, do the math.
Exactly.
You know, you're not talking about you have to come up with $50 million to participate in something like this.
Very true.
So, all right, so you go to Eastern Technology Fund. I got 1 minute to get you where you are now.
Sure. I was there for about a year, and I got to know our largest limited partner, which was the Lenfest family. They had invested about $1 million in our fund, and they had sold their company to Comcast for quite a bit of money. And they
that's right. I forgot that.
And so I worked for there for about a year and a half, and then was recruited by several of the board members here at Innovation Philadelphia to join Innovation Philadelphia and run the investment program and start a new angel fund as well as start a new venture capital fund.
Oh, you had to start the fund.
I had to go out and raise money and
you're
do the
kidding.
Whole thing.
How many investors and how many dollars did you have to arrange for the angel fund?
Well, I met with about 680 of the high net worth individuals that I had met over the years.
Oh,
and
wow.
And I ended up with 70 investors. It's a small fund, about $3.5 million. And we call it the Mid-Atlantic Angel Group Fund.
Okay.
So all those contacts paid off, and we're actually out in the process right now of closing a second portion of that fund.
Isn't that neat? You spend a lot of time at meetings.
Well,
after the break, we're going to find out how these angel funds work. This is the Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler.
Business information you need, from the stock market to starting and managing your business. Voice America Business at voiceamerica.com.
If you're a struggling business trying to get to the next plateau and would like to learn more about what Aldana can do for you, log on to thegrowthstrategist.com. Listen to some of our many satisfied clients.
We called in the Growth Strategist to do a strategic analysis of our company, design an organizational structure, and improve our management team. The important point is that Aldana Ambler gets it. Her extensive experience coaching fast growth companies has really paid off for us.
Aldana played a key role in driving the rapid growth of our company. We now have a strategic growth plan in place, obtained growth financing, have a stronger management team, and expanded our services, and are already seeing profits. Companies dealing with business growth issues couldn't ask for a better or wiser business advisor than Aldana Ambler.
What are you waiting for? Call 1-888-ALDONA today and see where your business can go tomorrow. Once again, that number is 1-888-ALDONNA. TheGrowthStrategist.com. Achieving accelerated growth with sustained profitability.
One aspect of the American dream is a safe and decent place to live that fits within each person's financial capabilities. Based on the individual and the community, home may have very many different meanings. For discussion on housing issues, log on and listen to Let's Talk Affordable Housing with Ginger McGuire every Friday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk. Voice America Business.
Are you feeling slammed and suckered in today's stock market? If so, then you need to tune in to Profitable Investing with Jordan Kimmel. Every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, Jordan Kimmel will train you in what you can do to beat up the big boys on Wall Street, as well as share his secrets to success so that you can buy and sell like a profit-pumping pro. Grab the bull market by the horns and listen to Profitable Investing with Jordan Kimmel. Every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
The Bottom Line in Business Talk. Voice America Business.
You're logged on to The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. Call in right now with your questions and comments toll free at 1-866-233-7861. Now back to another segment of The Growth Strategist. Here's Aldana Ambler.
Welcome back to the show, The Growth Strategist. This is Aldana Ambler, and if you're just tuning in, today we're talking about angel financing with Chris Starr of Innovation Philadelphia. Now, you know what, every time I think about, well, maybe we shouldn't do the whole biography of the guest, the people who are listening to the show bawl me out, because the journey is what's, you know, people find that fascinating. How did you get where you are? So if we, where we left off was Chris met with 680 people, got 70 investors. They have a relatively small fund of $3.5 million called the Mid-Atlantic Angel Group Fund. All right, I did the math. You're looking for like $50,000 each, or was it something different than that?
Basically, it was a minimum investment of about $75,000 per group. And that could be made up.
How does the math work?
That could be one individual. In some cases, we had three people split the $75,000. In other cases, we had a number of people split that. So the math doesn't work out to $75,000 apiece. The average would be quite a bit lower.
Now, that'd be kind of cool. So somebody with $25,000 that wants to see if they can do something different than just invest in stock on the market or, you know, give it to their kids can play in an angel fund.
Absolutely.
Isn't that neat? That's cool. Okay, so now the listeners are wondering, all right, now how do I apply and what would I be doing? Are you screening the applications of people who are looking for angel money? Is that your role?
That's part of my role, yes. Basically, what we do is we have an application process. Entrepreneurs find out about us through referral sources, through their attorneys, accountants. They can find us on the internet. We are on the speaking circuit fairly prominently, so we're out letting people know what we do. When they come across us and they need funding, they apply to us. Part of what I do is I review all the new business plans that come in.
How many do you get a week or a month?
We typically see about 20 to 40 a month.
Okay.
So it's a few hundred a year.
Out of the 20 to 40 a month, you know, how many of them would be worth you saying, let's go further? They make the first cut.
Basically, what we're looking for in our case are the two best deals out of those.
And so you may have a really good proposal, and you just didn't happen to be one of the two best deals that month.
That's right, and we'll let that pass over to the next month.
Interesting.
So we're looking for the two best, most pressing opportunities, ones where, you know, we really need to take a look at this deal right now. And we have a screening committee that assists in that process. These are 12 of the 70 members that are all very experienced in their areas of technology and business.
So the investors themselves participate in the screening?
They do.
Because one of the groups that I work with doesn't do that. One of the things that they're trying to do is have totally objective first screen.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a group that's managing that, and none of the investors are allowed to review the first screen. Isn't that interesting?
Every group seems to have their own dynamic.
Yeah.
It really depends on whether there's an administrative team or not and what the makeup is of the membership.
And that's relevant to somebody who's applying. They need to know that, you know, what that first screen's about.
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay. And how long does that take?
Typically, we will have a screening within 2 to 4 weeks of the time the application comes in. And the opportunity for those two companies to come and present to one of the general membership meetings where all 70 investors show up will usually happen within 4 to 6 weeks of that first application.
How many of those, you know, general meetings do you have a year?
We typically have one a month.
Okay. They all show up once a month?
Correct.
See, this is a little different. You can hear everybody, the guests on the show can tell from me that that's different from some of what I've seen.
Most of them show up.
Okay.
Again, these are angels. These are very successful people.
Yeah, they're busy
many
people.
Many of them are they're out running companies. Some are out traveling the world. Some are out playing golf and exotic places. But we try to get as many of them to the meetings as we can.
Are you doing things like, you know, the video conferencing that some other angel funds are doing?
We don't.
Well, you know, some of them are doing that so that you can get increased participation when somebody is off in the Barbados and, you know, they still want to play and they still want to hear about the next deal.
Right.
But they don't want to get off the beach.
Well, what we actually have done is we found that most of the angels, if they really want to be there, they'll do what it takes to be there. If they aren't there, they have something that's more pressing that's going to be taking their time, whether it's something that's business or personal related. But what we do allow them to do so that they can be engaged is allow proxy votes for some of the other folks in the group who they know and trust that they can vote their interest for them.
Okay, so now we got a process of an application.
Yep.
It gets vetted. You get two that you're going to review. You have a meeting. Most of the investors are there.
Right.
What makes these people angels versus VCs? You know, what do they want?
The first thing that's critical is it's their money.
Okay.
Unlike VCs that go out and raise other people's money, these people can make their own decisions. It's their money. If they want to invest in some crazy idea that a VC would never look at, they can.
That's true.
And they do.
And the group dynamic can make that happen.
Often you'll see, while the focus of our group tends to run toward technology, you'll often see people doing deals on the side that are completely unrelated. They might not do the investment through the fund, but it's not uncommon to see people doing real estate deals or funding movies or getting involved in other types of businesses, restaurants, retail.
Now, there's a good piece of advice. So somebody gets turned down by a big group like this,
doesn't mean
not going to get money.
Right. You should still work every avenue that you can because, and you shouldn't be discouraged just because you might be, you know, not be one of the you know, two companies out of the 40 that apply doesn't mean that someone in the group isn't going to, you know, have their eye caught by the company and track you down separately.
Now, is there a list, published list of these, you know, 70 people, or is it pretty anonymous?
It's anonymous.
Okay. Because that's what a lot of, I find, the business owners don't understand. That's one of the benefits of being in a group.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, many of these people are very well known. They're established business leaders. You'd see them in the newspapers every week.
Right.
These are folks that are, you know, we have out of the 70, we've got 45 current or former CEOs.
Yeah.
We've got a dozen prominent business attorneys. We've got venture capitalists. We've got consultants, investment bankers. So these are folks that are fairly prominent in the region. And many of them are very well-known business names.
It gives them a level of protection. Their money can still be put to use without having to handle all the calls.
Absolutely, and that's what many of them are looking for. I mean, angel investing, you know, there's four kinds of angel investors. There's the individuals who are relatively unsophisticated, just sort of the rich Uncle Tony who, you know, hey, I want to start a restaurant, let me go to my Uncle Tony, and he'll invest in you just because he likes you.
And he's a relative.
Right, and then you have the sophisticated individual angel, you know, the bank president who understands business that you go to, you might not have had a relationship with, but may invest in you purely on the business at hand. Then you've got people that join angel groups, and these are people that don't want to get involved necessarily in all the work that's required in doing, you know, individual angel investing. They want to spread the work around. They want more eyes in the deal. They want to have people with different backgrounds evaluating the different aspects of the company.
I find those are often, you know, like the guy who's looking to retire but not quite yet and, you know, took some chances but is a little nervous about the retirement money. You know, that's one type of person that acts like that.
Absolutely, and investing in a group is just a safer way to do it because the other advantage is instead of one angel putting up $25,000 into a venture, it might be 10 putting up $250,000.
Yeah.
And that $250,000 will really make a difference in making sure the company has a chance of getting where they need to.
What's the fourth type?
The fourth type is the angel fund,
Got
and
you.
This is what we consider to be sort of the highest evolution of it. When we were deciding whether we were going to form a group or fund, we went the fund route. And what we do is we basically bridge the gap between the angel group and a full-blown venture fund. We provide a lot of the competitive advantages that a venture fund has. We've got professional due diligence. We've got an administrative team. We've got the ability to do follow-on investments. We've got the ability to do larger investments than typically an angel group would be able to do on their own.
So some of their money goes to paying for that.
Absolutely. And also, one of the biggest things that we have as an advantage of a fund is guaranteed diversification.
Okay.
You mentioned earlier in the show that the venture capital model is one where you hope that you get one or two big hits and the rest will either fail or not do very well.
Yeah.
Maybe you'll make a little money back. Well, many angels will only invest in one or two or three deals.
Yep.
And that's not enough to get proper diversification from sort of a financial theory standpoint.
Right.
And the likelihood of getting your one big hit out of two deals is pretty unlikely.
Right.
Investing as an angel through a fund like ours guarantees you're going to have 10 or 12 deals in the portfolio, and you'll at least be getting enough swings at bat that you have a likelihood of success.
So what's the typical amount of money that somebody who's applying gets, and what kind of return on investment are the angels looking for?
Basically, we invest typically between $200,000 and $250,000.
Again, you know, yours is a smaller number than some of them, right?
It is,
and
that is the fund alone.
Okay.
Often we were investing in rounds that may range from $1 to $2 million.
Okay.
So, $200 to $250 may come from the fund. Our individual angels may invest side by side with us on similar terms. So, it wouldn't be unusual for us to invest $500,000.
So you have lawyers and attorneys pretty busy. Attorneys and accountants busy crafting these deals when you make your decision, because you've got multiple deals sometimes.
We do, yeah.
Okay.
So it wouldn't be unusual for, you know, in a $1 million deal for the fund to come in for $250,000 and another $250,000 to come in from individuals, so we control half the deal.
Say you put up $250,000.
Yep.
Over what period of time do the angels want to see return?
These are long-term investors. I mean, again, these are folks that they've made their money somewhere else. They don't need a return from investment to put food on the table. They usually have a portfolio of other assets like real estate and stocks and bonds. So this portion of their portfolio, they are relatively comfortable with spending, having a long time horizon.
Long-term meaning what?
Typically, you're looking at 3 to 7 years,
okay.
With sort of five
seven's
years being...
Seven's long. 5 years is what I see as typical.
Five is the typical.
Okay.
You know, three is great. Seven is, well, you wish it would have happened quicker, but unfortunately, it took a little longer than expected. But the average, if you look at angel investments, the average exit actually tends to be about 4.6 years. So the five-year
is it really?
Range is...
Okay, I knew it was around five.
Yep.
All right, now, you know, let's play the five-year point. And they put in $250,000. What do they want back?
Typically, our angels are looking for about 10 times what they originally put in.
10 times. All right. Well, after the break, we'll come back and we'll talk about how do you approach them and what are the contact information. This is The Growth Strategist with Aldona Ambler.
When business is in your blood and you need answers, get connected. Call 1-866-233-7861.
If you're a struggling business trying to get to the next plateau and would like to learn more about what Aldona can do for you, log on to thegrowthstrategist.com. Listen to some of our many satisfied clients.
We called in the Growth Strategist to do a strategic analysis of our company, design an organizational structure, and improve our management team. The important point is that Aldona Ambler gets it. Her extensive experience coaching fast-growth companies has really paid off for us.
Aldona played a key role in driving the rapid growth of our company. We now have a strategic growth plan in place, obtained growth financing, have a stronger management team, and expanded our services, and are already seeing profits. Companies dealing with business growth issues couldn't ask for a better or wiser business advisor than Aldona Ambler.
What are you waiting for? Call 1-888-ALDONA today and see where your business can go tomorrow. Once again, that number is 1-888-ALDONNA. TheGrowthStrategist.com. Achieving accelerated growth with sustained profitability.
Are you looking for a unique perspective on today's market from an experienced economist? Well, look no further. Listen to The Economic Contrarian with host Mike Norman every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time on Business America Radio. Mike and his guests will discuss new trends in the marketplace, as well as emerging companies and opportunities. So if you want in-depth analysis from a contrarian point of view, don't miss The Economic Contrarian, Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, right here on BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
Keeping you a step ahead of the changing world of business. This is Voice America Business.
You're listening to The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. If you would like to call into the show, dial toll-free at 1-866-233-7861. Now let's jump into another segment of The Growth Strategist. Here's your host, Aldana Ambler.
Welcome back. This is Aldana Ambler, the Growth Strategist, and we are talking with Chris Starr of Innovation Philadelphia. And we just hit us with how much money these angels are going to be wanting after their 5 years. And it's 10 times. Now, he and I on the break are looking at it going, you know what, that's changed over the years. You know, for a while, angel money was less demanding than VC money.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think, more recently, angels have been getting more sophisticated. I think that they are more likely these days to get involved in a group. And view their angel investing as a business. And I think that this has happened. There's been a great shift over the last 5 years. You know, if you look at the late 90s, angel investing was a game where, a CEO who would be a would-be angel would find out about a deal and, hey, could I get a piece of that? And they would write a check.
Yeah.
And they would end up getting burned when the market crashed. And so a lot of angels really got beat up pretty bad investing in things they didn't necessarily understand. Mm-hmm. They didn't necessarily negotiate great terms. They didn't necessarily have hurdles that they were looking to make. They were just looking to get in on the next Microsoft.
And
got really beat up when VCs either never came in on a follow-up round and the companies fell apart, or VCs did come in and do a follow-on round and crammed them down by valuing the company lower than what the angels did. So angels have learned their lessons and they've gotten smarter, and more and more of them are treating this like a business.
So now how does it work? They want 10 times, but how do they guarantee they're going to get that? Well, do they demand it as a note?
Well, typically we're investing some type of equity. Sometimes it's structured as convertible debt, and there might be warrants as well, but it's convertible into equity if it's not equity to begin with.
So let's say a company's gotten money from the angels, okay?
Right.
And it's now 2005. Mm-hmm. They know that 2010's coming up, and they're going to owe $2 million, something back. What happens if it doesn't look good? Is there intervention of some kind that... Wait a second, you guys aren't on the right track, and we're going to change who the president is or something like that?
Well, there are lots of provisions that typically angels, again, the more sophisticated angels, the ones who are investing in groups and funds, are acting very much like VCs in their terms. So we'll have what are called liquidation preferences, meaning that if for some reason the company needs to be sold off, we get our money out first. If the assets get sold, we're taken care of first. So that's one way that we can... make sure that things work out our way financially.
So it doesn't hit the fifth year and then surprise, surprise, you can't get your money. I mean, there's interaction in between.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. That's what a lot of people don't get with angels. They think the VCs do that, but the angels don't. It's not right.
No, especially now. And there's all of these different types of provisions that basically give the angels a level of control over the investment and an increased ability to recoup some of their investment if things don't go well. Also, they are more likely to get their money out early if things do go well.
All right, I was just going to say, if it looks like it's headed toward default, can they just pull out?
They can. Typically, in most angel term sheets now, they do have the ability to influence the company in a way which would get some of the money out.
So somebody looking for, $250,000 now really does need to know the fine print of what happens if things don't look like they're going well because, you could lose your house, you could lose your business, you could lose a lot because the angels aren't going to just sit there and, watch you.
No question about it. These are areas that are best tread with a great lawyer and a great accountant.
Yep.
And walking through possible scenarios, including very clear analysis of worst case and most likely case.
But I said this on the show related to venture capitalists, too. Sometimes I think people need more than just money, because if it starts to go south on them and it doesn't look like they're going to be able to grow as rapidly as they thought, they need the business acumen of these investors. They don't just need their money.
No question about it. You know, angels and VCs may not admit this, but in the end, we are service providers.
That's exactly right. It isn't just money. A lot of times it's the advice that's more valuable than the money.
No question about it.
Mm-hmm.
And if I were the CEO of a company and I was going out and getting funding, I would target those angels that I thought could add the most value to me as a potential board member, their circle of influence, what customers they might be able to introduce me to, what revenue sources they might be able to get me in front of.
They're partners. I mean, they're buying into their business. You know, think about it.
Absolutely. And they should basically be interviewing their potential investors very much the same way that the investors are interviewing them.
Now, what percentage of them end up on the board?
It depends. Typically, when a company starts out, there's normally a three-person board, and as the company moves along, it will go to 5 to 7 and so on. The one thing that happens as additional rounds of funding come in, typically investors will want more and more representation on the board.
Right.
So in the early rounds, it might be an even mix. You might have the CEO, an investor, and then an independent third party agreed to by both.
Right.
And then you go to 5 members. It might be 2 from the company, 2 from the investors, and again an independent third. By the time you start getting in the third and fourth rounds of financing, investors have pretty much taken over control of the board. The original entrepreneur who might have owned 100% up front may own 20%, 30%, 40%.
May or may not still be president.
And may or may not still be president. They might have been moved to an operating role. They might be moved into a title role, or they might be out of the company. They might have decided, you know what, I'm good at starting things, but I'm going to move on to my next company and walk away with my founder stock.
Now, we're 3 minutes to the end, so I want to make sure that there's some contact information for you provided. How about we do that right now?
Sounds great.
Where would somebody contact you in Innovation Philadelphia?
They can check out our website at www.iphila.com, iphila.com, or at
Innovation Philadelphia, iphila, okay.
Correct. Or at the Mid-Atlantic Angel Group Fund website, which is www.magfund.com. And my contact information, telephone number, and email address is on both of those websites.
Gotcha. And would you like phone calls or not?
Email is probably best.
Nowadays it is. And is the application that somebody would use to, you know, have you look at their proposal on those sites?
Both of those sites have the application.
Okay. So now if somebody is looking for your counterpart in other states, they look for Innovation Wichita or what?
Well, most of the larger regions, say the top 50 areas in the country, will have economic development organizations, technology councils, or some type of organization that will provide a directory of the various players in a region.
I often tell people to look for the associations that have the word technology or venture in them.
Absolutely.
Just to start.
That's the first place to start.
Yep.
Check their websites. Do a search. You know, if you're in Kansas, search Kansas Technology and see what comes up.
Yeah.
And you're likely to find, you know, a couple organizations that will meet the bill. And you can track down the different investors that way. And if you're not in one of the top areas, you know, do your search based on the next closest city.
Well, people do it on a regional basis. I mean, I know there's a Midwest, you know, group. And
exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Any final piece of advice to our, you know, people that are listening? Most of them have companies that are a little bigger than $1 million. The average listener has about a $20 million company. They're past the angel money in a way, those listeners?
Well, for those that are past the angel stage, the best thing to do is now that you're successful and growing, you know, give back. This is a great way.
Yeah, they could be a participant.
It's a great way to do good as well as to make some money.
I really appreciate you being on the show and encouraging people to be significant. This is the Growth Strategist with Aldona Ambler. I look forward to listening to everybody and talking with everybody next week on The Growth Strategist.
Voice America Business would like to thank you for logging on and tuning into The Growth Strategist. Join us each Tuesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time for another exciting episode of The Growth Strategist, right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.